Well, I love Brian because he comes in, he reads news, the big newspaper.
Yeah.
The broadsheet.
How are you, mate?
You're comfortable with The Age?
I'm covered with anything. I love reading anything sport, but it's a good chance to catch up. Interesting. First and foremost, lovely to hear your dulcet tones are back.
They are more tony, aren't they?
They are a bit more tony, yes.
You got me through that last hour Monday. I got in a bit of trouble, but honestly, I thought the voice would get better. It got worse.
Now, listen.
It's back, baby.
Hold on. When you say a bit of trouble, there's degrees of getting in trouble, and I know what trouble is, and I don't think you got in trouble.
No, yeah, well, I've got to say, when it comes to trouble,
let's move on. Me covered. How are you? Good to see you. A lot happening. Interesting talk about, we're having a chat out there about the power of the women's sport at the moment. And I think one thing that probably gets lost is one point you made, which is it's not men's sport. So the comparisons really aren't there. But relative to the gender, it's very, very good sport. And, you know, I was just reading then about Jess Cameron, who is playing both codes. She was drafted by Carlton. She's playing for the Melbourne Stars in the Big Bash. I defy anyone, male or female, to say she's not a great athlete to be able to play at the top level.
Elise Perry?
Absolute elite of their type, which is fantastic, isn't it?
And I wonder how many people are familiar with, and again, I don't know her first name. It's like Juliette or Jeanette, but I'll check it in a moment. Barsby, Trevor Barsby's daughter.
Yeah, there's some fantastic women that are coming to the fore.
Do you know her story?
No, I don't.
Look, she's a very good cricketer, but she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis recently. Mm. Now, that is... It's a debilitating disease.
Challenging in itself.
But at this stage, manageable for her. She has to be very careful with her body temperature. Mm. So playing in the heat requires management above and beyond the normal ice vests, etc.
Mm.
But it's a story that, if there was a cricketer playing in the Big Bash League with multiple sclerosis or for Victoria or for Australia... It'd be heralded worldwide, and she's doing a marvellous job.
Of course, with these accolades comes an expectation, whether it be male, female, no matter what the sport is, that they will be fairly remunerated for their efforts. And I pick up the paper again today, and we read that there's issues around wages and pay negotiations with women's cricket and men's cricket. Then we know
Susie O'Brien getting involved again?
Possibly. And then we know the AFL are fighting at the moment with the Players Association, well, perceived to be. I mean, the media beat it up. I'm sure it will be settled, but there's now talk about, well, we'll do what we need to do. The Rugby League Players Association are at loggerheads with the NRL. So it's never easy, is it?
But there's a fiscal reality, and it will.
I agree with that.
Their remuneration will be step in line with their attendances and the money that they get from TV contracts and advertising contracts. Look, I'm sure that the Australian volleyball team would love to get paid as well as the Australian cricket team, but unfortunately, it is not a sport that has a financially viable. Roadmap.
And the great anomaly with these team sports compared to the individual sports is there's two individual sports in particular, in tennis and golf, that the athletes can make an enormous amount of money, and it's all relative to what their sport generates. So tennis, for example, enormous media coverage, great sponsorship. So the athletes who are far less number of athletes playing at the top level than there are playing cricket or AFL or rugby league get a greater share of the pool. But that's because it's so hard to play at that level. And it's the same as golf, isn't it? So it's all relative to what the game can afford, no matter what the sport is. And I think that's the thing that probably is a bit lost. I'm not a critic of the AFL stance on the women's sport, because I think as the women's AFL continues to grow, like the cricket continues to grow and gets greater coverage and gets greater sponsorship, it will generate more pay for the athletes. And I think that's fair. But you've got to walk slowly, don't you? And you've got to crawl first, I think.
The reason why I'm enthusiastic about women's football is based in there's a social reason for it, and I'll get back to that after we grab a few calls. But there is, not financially but in terms of competing on the sporting field, a degree of equality that women have really only just come at. I'll explain why after we take a couple of calls. Alan's in Sandringham. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, gents. How are you this morning?
Good, Alan.
Big supporter of women's sport. Watched the cricket game on the weekend between the Sixers and the Heat with the young Barsby girl, and I think even that's a great story. But there's some stuff that I want to make sure doesn't get lost. a bloke like myself who's got some young women in his family that play sport, I'm really looking forward to the leadership in society coming from it, about young girls, about just the building the character of young women in our society and their confidences as well. Not so much just having biceps like Pataki's and on the ground and equality in pay, but I'm looking for what will come as a byproduct that, you know, I'm pretty sure we're not going to see too many girls in drunk punch-ons and this sort of stuff that we tend to get, and scandals that we get from the men, and I hope that doesn't happen, and I'm sure it won't. But just it gives the young girls and the young sports girls a lot of role models and a lot of confidence to either be part of a team, step out of their comfort zone, apply themselves, be disciplined in their own lives, and a lot of that off-field stuff that's really good for our burgeoning young sports people.
It's a great point, Alan, and maybe one where I can take up a further element of the balancing out of how genders are treated in Australian society and then maybe beyond our shores. You make a great point. Role models and the fact that these girls now have some... My girls and your girls have somebody to emulate, but even in my lifetime and your lifetime, Brian, maybe not that of our teen listeners, and then going back even further, women and sport was a very contentious issue because women were considered to be the fairer sex. They were spared from the midday heat and they certainly were not encouraged to play.
No, not the done thing. That's right. It wasn't the done thing.
They were put on tennis courts. Mm. Netball's a great game, but it was born out of... an ideal of a sport that was non-contact. And let me tell you, it's pretty physical now. But back in the day, this was an alternative to what the boys were doing, which was getting out there and killing each other on the rugby and football fields. Mm. Women were not allowed to do that. And women were certainly spared from a sport like Australian rules football because it was unladylike. Mm. Now, that is old thinking. And our girls have as much right to go out there and play physical sport as men do, and let's see how they ply their trade. But so we're only coming at it now.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So my amateur club, De La, we started a women's team this year. We had our first girls' training night last night. They had seven girls come down, which was fantastic, at about 8-9 apologies. But the general gist is they just want to compete and do something, and they're absolutely genuinely excited. But the other aspect when it comes to having women involved at that level is a cultural aspect it brings to the club. And I reckon that's really important. And I know the amateurs competition, which you're involved in yourself, Fine. I know there's going to be 1,000 girls play, women play this year, which makes it the biggest competition, I think, nationally. But the big impact it's going to have at clubs like ours and all the others is that you're now going to have a group of girls, women involved, not only participating, but socialising more. And it takes that blokey element out. I understand there's a place. There's always a place and a time when guys want to be guys and hang out together. But I think it's a great thing socially for all sporting clubs to integrate the women in. And I think that's something that I'm looking forward to in my role at my club. And I guess you would be as well with the club you're involved in. I think it's really important.
The fact is footy's a great game to play. Hmm. I was no good at it, but I loved playing it right through until cricket took over at the age of 17. And it's a great game to play because it affords opportunities to people of all sizes.
It does, absolutely. That's the other beauty. You don't have to be anything in particular to play, male or female. You just want to be able to get out there and have a go. You can
run wherever you want. Yeah, there's no offside. You can chase the ball. Everybody's allowed to touch it.
You can not touch it and still have a good time. Really, you can, can't you?
And for 50% of society, yes, there has been women's football, but it's been marginalised and had a certain reputation. Now it's been brought out of the margins and where it belongs, given Auskick numbers and given how much our daughters and our sisters love playing footy as 8 or 9 year olds at Auskick. It's given its rightful place as a sport that all girls and women can play at various levels with with great pride and enjoyment.
And it means the amateurs, as I said, have now got 1,000 women, they reckon. That's 1,000 that weren't participating. 1,000 more doing something of a Saturday or Sunday.
They're never going to get an uptake like this in footy teams clubs unless they find a third gender.
Yeah, that's right. That won't happen.
Well, they're trying. Let's go to Brad in Port Melbourne. G'day, Brad.
How's it going, boys?
Okay, good, Brad.
Thanks.
Yeah, just I just want to bring up, in the country, that there's the women's netball leagues as well, which brings everyone together. I mean, the whole family comes on a Saturday and plays sport. And, you know, the girls play netball on netball courts, boys play footy. It brings the whole community together. And that's what I think what's fantastic about the women's football is it's going to bring couples together on a weekend, you know, to play footy together and all that. And
Brad, I reckon, are you from the country?
No, I've been up to a lot of country games. And yeah. To see.
I reckon you make a really good point. And the one thing, anyone that's come to play just at our level, socially, would always say that the country benefit is that it does bring male and female together. Quite often you'd have the AFL ground and the netball courts next door.
But
a lot of them are called football and netball clubs as well.
And we celebrated it, and though I'm not a boy from the country, it's always been a source of pride, and even started to spread into city football clubs as well.
Yeah.
But there was something I feel now that women's football has had such a wonderful uptake and so many girls are excited to play it at various levels. Isn't there now a realisation that there was some old world thinking, almost sexism, in saying the blokes play footy and the girls, we're going to put you on the netball court so you don't get your knees scratched or your hair mussed.
Possibly, yeah.
You know, girls, you play the netball, let the blokes play the
footy. But they can play it all, because the beauty of netball is you can play all year round.
And blokes can play it. I watch them play mixed they do netball, across et cetera.
Yeah, that's right.
Play whatever you want.
Yeah, that's right.
Just participate.
That's the key.
But all of a sudden, we've been told, girls, you can, and not only can play footy, but we're going to put a team out there. And
but it leads to another question you asked me.
Big turn up.
It also leads to the other question, we might discuss it after the break,
yep.
Is it drives television. And to get that, I mean, you watched it on the weekend. The women's cricket on the weekend had 600,000 viewers at its peak.
Yeah.
By crikey, that's a lot of viewers watching women's cricket. Which shows you the power of the sport. Now, people might say there wasn't much else on. That doesn't mean you have to watch it. It doesn't mean you have to watch telly. You can find something else to do. You still chose to watch it. So it shows the power of it from that point of view. And the AFL have done such a massive job promoting the women's football. Those ratings will go berserk as well. Whether they sustain it is going to be their challenge. But the way it's been promoted, it's extraordinary the power they've put behind it. So it's going to be fascinating.
And they do tap into something that other sports will take decades to achieve, and that is loyalty to clubs that transcends...
It exists, that's right.
That transcends logic.
Carlton Collingwood exists. It's 100 years old, that's right.
Need to take a break. Of course, Brian, you're here for Jet Couriers.
Absolutely.
Greg, Jim, David.
Greenie.
We're going to be with you after the break, and we'll be with you as well. 9429 11 16.
I want to ask you about choking too. That's a nice little topic I've got there. Just
I didn't do it.
We'll do it. You did.
Oh,
I bet you have.
Think Couriers, Think Jet Couriers. And Brian Waldron is in the studio thanks to their good grace and support. And let's go to Region Melton. Shortly we're going to talk about chokers. And I'm very interested in teams that choke.
Yes.
That when it spreads through an entire side, it almost becomes the team I barrack for. Reg is in Melton. Good morning to you, Reg.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello, Reg.
Make a bet here if you like. You can put your couple of batakis, your Endota Spa, your game pitcher, the whole lot.
Yes.
Get someone to bet that Chris Judd, he will play round 3 for Melton South against Darley next year.
Is that with Fev?
No.
It's in the Ballarat Football League.
No, isn't Fev coaching Melton South?
Chris Judd will play round 3.
No, but isn't Fev coaching Melton South?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Right, so that's why he's doing it, yeah. Why, just for money?
Not stay. Chris Judd wouldn't need money, would he? God.
Well, why else would he do it?
3 votes.
He'd want to do it for charity. If he's not doing it for money.
It's a big turnout for a club. I mean, I guess there's some scepticism about ex-AFL footballers playing these one-off games.
They help the local community.
No, I'm saying, but they really work. I agree with that.
Well, I know Fev's gone to Melton South, who have been struggling. It's been a nice way to put it. And he's gone there to coach and to help out, so I presume he's going to go pretty well. So if he's going to drag Juddy in to pay for his own wages, good on him. That'll work.
Hey, Reggie, you know all those... And you're from Melton, so you should know. It's Melton Info.
What?
Well, Reg is from Melton. He'd know.
Oh, yes, he'd know.
He got a tip at the trot.
Who else have they picked up, Reg?
No one as yet.
Just Fev.
He will make that. He'll make a lot of money for the club on that day.
Now I was very impressed by your ability to reel off all those prizes that we give away. Which one of those would you like?
Pataki.
We'll grab it. Seeing as the person who gave it to me said, if I give you this, you give me a couple of Pataki's. I said, I'll see what I can do.
Two Pataki's for Regs and his snout.
Pataki. Beautiful, Reg. You love the Pataki. Must get one myself for Christmas.
And people out Melton Way, Tabcorp Park in Melton's a very good facility. Well, I've been there? Oh, yeah.
I haven't been. Is it good?
You know, there's a couple of hotel rooms on the... Right on the home straight. Like, you get a room and...
And do what? Watch the racing.
Yeah, with your missus. I don't know whether she'd love it. I read something really quickly, but I misread it. Judd is playing with Fev in the game against Scotland. What are they talking about? Against Heath Scotland.
Is he playing for Darley? Okay.
Apparently. Let's go to Jim in Frankston. G'day, Jim.
It's funny.
G'day, fellas. Look, if that fella's going to get that prize, I've got a bigger rumour.
What's that?
And it relates to basketball. Also got a query about fishing after finding. Look, I've heard from a sponsor sort of related source that there's going to be an NBA game, not this season, of course, but next season, Oklahoma City being one of the teams, will be played in Melbourne.
So they're the Thunder.
Russell Westbrook plays for them. I was going to say
Russell Westbrook. They're in Melbourne? In Melbourne. Oh, what? Gee.
Isn't it interesting?
Potential sponsor of the game. So it's, you know, it's, from a friend.
Is it through the Dodo connection that has seen Melbourne United and the NBL research?
He's done a pretty good job. Larry's doing a pretty good job with the competition, you've got to be fair. So they've done a great job reigniting the domestic basketball competition. If you were to say, out of all the international sports, Mark, that you would like to see played here, what would it be?
Definitely EPL. See West Ham.
You'd love to see West Ham, would you?
If Muhammad can't get to the mountain, bring the mountain.
I'd love to see an NFL game here. I'd love to see one. I've been to one over there.
Yeah, I would too. I've been to Major League Baseball. I've been to a lot of Major League Baseball.
I haven't done a baseball, but I've done the long time
NFL
ago.
Would be great.
Wouldn't it be good to see an NFL game here?
How about of soccer games?
Yeah.
I mean, as much as I'm a fan, because I was brought up watching the EPL, imagine if we could get a La Liga game here.
Well, Bart's bringing out the, I was just reading today, who are we getting out? We've got...
Brazil and Argentina. Sure.
If Bart can bring Brazil and Argentina, any dough he lost from the venture last year will be well and truly covered in one hit, because I don't think it was a huge success.
The weather was terrible.
And the teams weren't as good as... We got spoilt first year, didn't we?
Yeah, but it was played on just a horrible winter nights, and it was hard to ask people to drag themselves out to see really second-rate versions of great clubs.
I went to Liverpool Victory. That was a great night.
That was, you know, Liverpool, to this very day, you talk to Liverpool fans from England and even the club, the rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone.
That was amazing, yeah.
They mark as one of the great moments in the history of their club.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. It was a great night, and I'm not a Liverpool fan, not that I need to be to enjoy great sport, but I thought it was terrific, really terrific. Interesting who we've got coming up.
Jim, you snouted well as well. You've won yourself a $50 voucher to New York Minute Burgers. That's good snouting.
Oh, well done, Jim.
Let's go to David in Ballarat. G'day, David.
Yeah, boys, I'm about to talk about the cricket, but I just say I'm fully behind the push for women's sport. Remember, rowing was years ago, 30 years ago, really, I don't think it was hardly any women's rowing. Now it's predominant with Kim... Crow winning the...
It's vital.
Winning that. But anyway, with the cricket, I'm just pleased that finally they're being sensible with their scheduling for next year, with at least three Shield games prior to the Test Series, and then a significant number of T20s with the Tri-Series with New Zealand as well. So it seems to be a lot more balanced setup.
Am I right in saying that the first Test starts November 28th, late November?
Yes.
Okay, right. That accommodates some meaningful Sheffield Shield cricket. Call it sensible, call it almost selfish by the Australians to prepare for the Ashes series in that manner. But, David, you are spot on. That is what we want to see. Now, there are commercial considerations always in sport, Wally, but we want to win the Ashes and we need to pick the best team based on a decent sample. And
we've been screaming.
Three field matches. We've
been screaming for years to understand how they put commercialism before the baggy grain. Well, finally, they've listened by the sound of it. And, I mean, it is determined by the big powers that run the game internationally, the Pakistanis and the Indians who control everything else. And Australia and the Poms sort of drag along behind. And South Africans, of course, never want to come out this time of year. But we know we're going to get the Poms, and we know when we get them, we need to prepare well, because I don't think any Australian would really care if we lost every test match against anyone else, as long as we win the Ashes.
You know, you said about sports that you'd love to see and come to Australia. Mm. Call me culturally insensitive, but I don't want the kabaddi to come to Australia. I couldn't work it out.
The kabaddi.
I watched it for 15 minutes looking
for
the...
Was that the one Campbell Brown played?
Yeah, it's like Tiggy, but there was no ball.
What is it?
It's like 14 men went to the park and forgot to take a ball and said, let's invent a sport.
I tell you what is a great sport. European handball is a great sport if you ever watched it. It's a fantastic sport to watch.
Well, I prefer down ball at the old school yard. A break, and when we come back, Nick will join us on the phone, and you can as well. Sounds fast, Jet Couriers. They've been around forever, so they must be a pretty good organisation.
Fantastic. Lenny Green and the boys, from an envelope to an elephant. If you've got a white van and you want to earn some money, ring my friends at Jet Couriers. They'll look after you every time.
Off the SMS, would love to see NCAA. Now, there's passion in America. There's where the real passion lies, in college football.
It's fantastic, isn't it? The Final Four's coming up there, and I think the old Bama's on top again, playing off. They have unbelievable coverage. They dominate Saturdays in the US, don't they?
It's been reported that the opening game of the 2017 NCAA season between Stanford and Rice will be played in Australia.
Is that right?
That'll be interesting. The Pineapple Bowl? The Kangaroo Bowl?
I'll go to that. There's that many bowls there are. They're amazing, aren't they? They also give great credit to their media scribes who actually vote for the teams they believe should be the best team. Which is
it's interesting, isn't it?
Very interesting.
There's been a debate there as whether they do need something that ends with a pointy end.
They do now. They've got a Final Four. They have a playoff, top four playoff now, which is interesting. But there's some, for years Alabama's been one of the great schools and winning it, haven't they?
Well, let's go to Mulgrave and Nick. Good morning, Nick.
Morning, gentlemen. How are we going?
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Now, both of you guys have got strong ties with the amateurs.
Yes.
The footy.
Yes.
Tell me, how can a club like St. Kevin's recruit Jay Maher, Sam Fisher and Jay Schultz, all players coming off probably $300,000 contracts?
Is Sam Fisher playing there?
Yeah, he's going there.
Have they got boys, any of these guys?
No. Look, there's a couple of things here. I mean, there's always the undertone that something inappropriate is taking place.
Payments, not cash.
No.
But opportunities in business, perhaps?
No, that's right. So the short answer is exactly that, is that in each of those instances, they will be offered opportunities to further their life after football. Now, there's a classic there they had called Stephen Gillam, who is employed by Swiss, who's a good supporter of Scops. But Stephen Gillam has a terrific job at Swiss and does a great job, from what I understand. So, I mean, my club for years has been able to find people jobs.
In the classroom?
No, not at all.
No, De La Salle.
De La Salle, yeah. Doesn't
that mean in the classroom?
No, it doesn't. We continually try to get people employment, but the thing is, you can't just get people jobs for nothing. You can't just say there's a job for $20,000, $30,000, $200,000 for nothing. So in each of these instances, I think you'll find Schultz, JMR and all these people.
Well, you asked Schultz and you know what he said?
I know nothing.
Correct.
In all these instances, they will be getting jobs through networks that St. Kevin's have been able to organise. And it's not just them, it's others too. I don't have any issue with that. Whether they are the right fit for the club at the age of 25, age of 30 plus is something for St. Kevin's to decide. But look, there's some terrific people at St. Kevin's. I'll defend my neighbours up the road from their right to recruit who they want, the Scobs boys, because having players of the ilk of Jay Schultz is not a bad thing for the competition, but it doesn't necessarily turn around and become a great positive unless Jay Schultz can deliver.
It doesn't always work out.
No, it doesn't. Many players come back from AFL and struggle. Gene Siracusa came back and struggled.
A lot of them do.
Ed Barlow came back and struggled at Scotch when I thought he'd be a good player.
You know the best I ever saw?
Who?
David Loates played for Old Camberwell.
Yes.
It was just impossible playing against him. Kick the ball up to the bloke. He was good.
Well, I think Mark Jamar is going to be a handy recruit. But Mark Jamar also has been, from what I understand, been given a work opportunity. So you can't do anything but say good on him. And look, I don't have any doubt that it's all done with the right intentions in the right way. So, and if it's not, the amateurs would look at it. But I don't see that as being an issue. I know the president of St. Kevin's very well, Paul Murphy, and he's a very, very good man.
So, do any of these lads have lads that are looking to go to school?
No, but see, people say about Jay Schultz, well, you've got to remember Stephen Salopik plays at St. Kevin's and was one of their leaders last year. He's a Port Adelaide. Was a Port Adelaide. He's a great mate of Schultz. Yeah. Makes sense, doesn't it? So there's nothing wrong with that. That's you know, our motto at my club is D-Low boys are mates of D-Low boys. That's what it is. St. Kevin's the same. So you can't argue that.
So having a club like the Monders Ormond, a district club,
yeah,
it's very hard because
I tell you what they've done. They've actually
got a great junior program.
Well, they've got two boys that actually, one boy that played at D-Low called Matt Hine, gone back, who played with us. He went to Mansfield. He's gone back there, and his brother Travis.
Yes.
They are Ormond boys. So yep. They've gone back and got the kids that have come back. So the district clubs, it is difficult because they don't have the feeders, but they still attract blokes back who want to try to give.
But they do get cherry picked by some. You know, Ormond have to fight off clubs in the Southern Footy League and even the Eastern Footy League. There's a bit of an ego trip for young blokes just being offered a bit of money per game.
But see, you know, Daniel Harford, I think you'll find, went back and played a year at Old Paradians. I know the bloke Patterson who played at St Kilda, the ruckman. He was at Uni Blacks, won a flag.
He played also for Richmond and Hawthorn, and he was on Hawthorns.
Yeah, he went back last year and played at Old Paradians just to say, I'm going back to my old boys, and he's played there now. I think he's gone off coaching somewhere else.
You know the greatest story of that happened at Ormond? So out of the blue, 2 years ago, Mal Michael just walks up at the club, and he said to them, you know, my father played for your club. Or my grandfather,
right?
Even.
Is that right?
And my dad said he'd like me to finish off at Ormond. Can I have a game with you? He played. He did his knee in pre-season, not bad, but took 6 weeks. I umpired the reserves there. Mm. His first two games were in the resis.
So that's beautiful. That's a great story.
And then he went and played some senior footy. It was very nice.
The other thing you remember about the amateur clubs, and you shouldn't begrudge their ability to find career opportunities for the likes of Jay Schultz, because they're competing against a pretty healthy market out there of dollars that are being offered to players to play suburban footy finally. The amount of money in some of these leagues.
It's
difficult. We've had some blokes that we thought were a chance to get that we offered careers to, then help them with their life after footy, but they've gone for the dollar. Now, that's their right. But
the point system hopefully will help.
Yeah, well, the thing about the point system, though, is you've been in the system, the points automatically come off, so it's only the new players.
Yeah, it's a worry because clubs are struggling for money, but there's an economy being made. It's an arms race that is a bit out of control, and it's chewing up some smaller clubs. We need to take a break, Wally, but we haven't got to chokers. And if we don't get to...
I've got a good choker story.
But I'm telling you, if we don't get to it by midday, we've choked.
On 11.16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, Mornings with Finey. Valinda Forklifts, rental rates from $9 a day with immediate delivery. And Mercedes-Benz Brighton. Think Mercedes-Benz, think Mercedes-Benz Brighton.
Welcome back. Brian Waldron has come in for Jet Couriers.
Yes, Mark.
Give us a choker before the
show. Oh, no, look, I was listening to Peter Donegan's interview with Pat Rafter, and I was encapsulated by Pat Rafter's explanation of what happened. You'll correct me with the year. The year he played Sampras in the final, and he led one set to love, four love up.
So around the turn of the millennium, around then, wasn't it?
And he said he choked. And Peter Donegan said, explain what happened. He said, I walked back to my seat at four love up, and I thought, I've got this. And he said, no, I had this adrenaline spike that went through the roof. He said, I can only think it's like if I was... It was like getting hit by drugs. He said it was the most incredible feeling. He said, I went back out on the court after that. He said, I went into a nervous panic, a cold sweat. I went back out on the court and I lost the game. He said, and from there on, it went downhill and I just choked. He said, and I lost. And we're talking about a bloke that's won US Opens and won a variety of major championships. But he said he just choked. And to hear him say that was fascinating. But it got me thinking of the greatest chokers going around. And you've got a few yourself. But who are the great chokers? And have they ever actually gone, yep, I put my hand up and I actually just lost it when it counted?
Well, obviously, I mean, ones that sort of had to give the game away, Ian Baker.
Yeah.
Golf's a very tough game. Every stroke, between every shot, you've got a lot of time to think. And it's thinking that causes people to choke. It's a psychological condition. So the longer the time, the more chance it'll happen. So golf is littered with it. But I'm interested in teams. And Brazil, the greatest football team historically the world has ever seen, finally get to host a World Cup. They get beaten 7-0 by Germany in a semi-final where Germany admit afterwards that in the second half the players decided enough is enough. We are destroying a nation, not just a football team. And they actually took the foot off the pedal in a semi-final against Brazil and won 7-0.
Now, speaking of soccer, did we choke in 97?
Against Iran?
Yeah.
I don't know. Was it a Bucks night?
I was there.
Yeah.
That was the first night I remember watching that. It was the first night I actually fully appreciated how good an athlete a soccer player was, because I reckon it was Robbie Slater who was playing.
Yep.
Up and down on the wing, I'd call it the wing. And the amount of running he did, it was exhaustive to watch.
Yeah, and there's no trip the ball around and take a breather while you're taking a mark.
It's on
and on and on.
But did we choke that night?
Oh, look, as I said, I was at the at a Bucks night, so my memory is sketchy. Now, what month was it?
It was the middle of the year, I reckon, wasn't it? Was it cold? I've got a funny feeling it was a cold night.
I can't remember. I'm trying to think whether the horrors of the grand final were yet to happen to me or not.
What about
her? I remember we were all watching on a big screen at a pub before the entertainment arrived.
Mm.
She didn't choke.
Mark.
No, she performed well. Mm. So the commentator said something that I thought was extraordinary. After we scored the second goal, they said, that's a very dangerous score, 2-0.
Everyone says that.
I didn't know what they were talking about until Iran scored two goals and I realised on goal difference Australia were out.
Tell me, did Herschel Gibbs choke?
When he dropped the World Cup. Yeah.
Did he choke?
A bit.
Dropped the ball.
Now, there's been a few cricket chokes. Do you remember a leg spinner called Johnny Watkins from New South Wales?
Yes, I do, yes.
He couldn't hit the pitch.
I'll tell you,
Glenn Trimble?
The other one that was did he choke? When the NRL Grand Final with the Cowboys and the Broncos, when Thurston hit the crossbar and it bounced through, and from the kickoff, Ben Hunt dropped the ball.
No,
is that a choke?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you try not to say choke. Who was it? Was it Sarah O'Hare? Who announced the winner of... And they announced the wrong name.
Sarah Murdoch. Yeah, she did too.
That's one of the worst chokes of all time.
Now, come on. Let's talk about the number one choker, the one you didn't want to say off air.
I felt that Greg Norman,
yes,
throughout his career, and this will,
yes,
with 3 minutes to go in the program, probably be hard to debate. Mm. He had a particular way of choking. And look, he never won as many majors. He won 2 British Opens, and obviously he gave up a Saturday slam where he led all 4 majors.
Yeah.
He had horrors against Nick Faldo and then names like Larry Myers and Bob Tway. I mean, these things cause sleepless nights.
Mm.
And you look at the wins and you say, well, they were chipping it in and putting from off the green. But I felt Greg Norman, down the stretch in a lot of majors when he was leading, went for very difficult strokes. Long iron shots, hard shots into the green, taking woods off the fairway, because you know what? If you miss, it's not a choke. It's just too daring, too reckless. I don't think he had the nerve to hit steady golf.
Of course, our Kiwi friends across the ditch who love their sailing will remember the America's Cup. Do you remember the America's Cup in, I think it was 2013, when they led 8-1?
They
lost 9-8.
Oh, that's right. They did. What was that black something?
That would arguably be as big a choke as any sporting choke. And what about the golfer in the at Canoosti? Who was that?
John van der Velde.
Now, he just lost it, didn't he?
Mark Allen says he didn't choke. He was just very unlucky. That was a bad...
Jana Novotna. She was a great choker.
She actually choked. But she came back and won after that.
We should have laughed at people's foibles. It is funny, isn't it, when you think about it?
Hey, we've all had our moments.
Yeah, Brian.
Brian's
from
in Thomastown.
Thomastown is someone.
Are you there, Brian? Yes.
Jared Hayne in his first NFL game.
What did he do?
Well, he fumbled the ball.
He fumbled the first kickoff or punt for the whole game and ruined his.
But hold on. But I would argue that a choker is someone that is in a winning position that loses, rather than someone that just makes an error. So I wouldn't say Jared Hayne choked. I would say nerves might have got to him, or he just made an error. But would you argue that that's what it is, Finey? That if you are in a position to win, yet you do not cope with the pressure of that expectation.
That's the choke. All right. Well, I'll give you. I'm telling you that I did one of the worst chokes ever earlier this year, and it wasn't about winning. Mm. It was a complete choke. I had to contact my missus. I was out. I was under the weather.
Yes.
And I got the first two code entries into my mobile phone incorrect. Mm. And if you get it wrong three times, you're locked out for an awkward period.
So you weren't game two.
And I mucked up my own code because I choked. I had to get the numbers right.
It doesn't surprise me knowing you.
And I choked.
Always fun, Finey.